Hey everybody, it's Sam with National Sports Overtime, and tonight I just kind of wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about college athletes and their endorsement deals that they can receive under the NIL ruling, the name and likeness ruling that was made, that college athletes can now make money on their name, on their likeness, and there's no cap or anything. And I guess the thing that I heard so much, probably since it came into effect on July 1st, but especially here in the last week, maybe 10 days, people have been asking, is college endorsement deals going to change life for the athlete? And, you know, I can't help but think, yeah, some of the college kids that we watch on TV, that we go to the stadiums to see, or the basketball arenas to see, the kids that we stand outside in the hallway or outside of a door to meet, or just to get an autograph or picture of when they come out after a game, are going to be making life-changing money for playing football for 3 years, or playing basketball for 2 years, or baseball for four. But is it going to be life-changing in other ways? And I think that is going to take 2, 4, 10 years for us to figure out. We all know that signing a $100,000 contract for anyone changes their lives. I mean, think about you. Maybe you currently make over $100,000, but remember what it felt like when you first did that. And if you're not making $100,000 a year now, think what that would be like if you were to start tomorrow. Now think what that would be like if you were 18 or 20 years old. But I also look at it on the flip side about the taxes that they're going to have to pay. The things that come with money as far as being a college athlete, they're now going to have to hire someone to maintain a schedule, to negotiate deals, to make sure they're not ripped off, they're actually paid, that it's not a scam, that taxes are filed, or taxes are made out quarterly. They're also, of course, wanting to do what some of them truly feel in their heart that they have to do, or that they want to do because they've seen others do it on TV, and that's to take care of their parents or their grandparents or whoever has really helped them get to the place where they can make this kind of money. And so many people thought, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal, that this is probably just going to be spending money for them. Maybe. But it's going to be additional money that they normally wouldn't have. And sometimes when you're young and dumb and broke, you make stupid decisions. But guess what? When you're young, dumb, and have money, you also make stupid decisions. Some decisions are the same, some are not. And I think we have to sit down and think about the members of the University of Miami Hurricanes. Their football team was offered a deal. No, not the football program. Each one of their 90 scholarship players, according to ESPN, were offered the same exact deal by a Florida-based mixed martial arts gym. And the deal was they could sign for $500 per month to promote this business on social media. Now, details weren't given as far as how often they had to post or how many followers they had to have or stuff like that. But think about it. If that starts this month and runs through December, maybe even January, you're looking at $2,500 to $3,000 that these athletes are going to get before Christmas that they wouldn't have had. Now think back on your college years, what you could have done with $3,000. Now, we all know that they're not going to save $500 a month. But just think of what you could do with $3,000 as a college athlete. Remember, they're not paying tuition. They're not paying room and board. They're not paying their food. They're not paying their travel. There are all kinds of perks that a college athlete does get that the average student doesn't get. So if every player on the Miami Hurricanes accepted the offer, then there would be a combined $540,000 being paid out. That would be one of the largest endorsement deals for college athletes since the NCAA allowed players to make money from sponsorships, and that began on July 1st. And then what if you have a natural advantage? Say your dad's famous and you just happen to be a college athlete. Will you make more money because more people follow you? Because they're aware of you because of your dad. I don't know, but you look at Master P's son, Hersey Miller, reportedly it was reported in the Tennessean. He's a Tennessee State basketball player, signed a $2 million deal with a tech company called Web Apps America. $2 million. Now, Master P, if you've heard any of his sons talk about him, always made them work for their money, didn't just hand them loads of money to go party and do whatever they wanted. But any kid, and I still think of college athletes as kids. Hersey Miller, from everything I've read or I've seen him interviewed, is a kind of a class act. He presents himself very well. And I'm sure his dad already has people that help him and help his other sons and other kids, I should say, to manage their schedules and manage money and things like that so they can learn. But still, this is a big deal. $2 million? And then you've got even other athletes that are jumping on the bandwagon in this NIL era. Now, Miami's quarterback. Now, he's already, if he took the offer, making $500 a month for the MMA gym. Remember I told you that before. But he also got with the Florida State quarterback. And what they were announced 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. They were the co-founders of Dreamfield. You can look it up and read more about it. But what it is a platform for college athletes to help them book live events. And you're like, live events? Can they rap? No. Live events such as meet and greets, such as autograph signings, as just taking pictures with people before athletes or their parents or their grandparents, an uncle or somebody, had to take care of that for them after they had graduated or they had entered their name into the NFL draft. They would call around local sports stores or call around to, I've seen them even sign in front of bookstores or something like that in a mall or on, I don't know, kind of one of those strip mall things. Well, this platform, if you get on and you read about it, is going to help them create that so someone in their family isn't, excuse me, going through Google, excuse me, and just calling every place in town trying to get a couple booked. So that has a possibility of not only making money this year, but since it's the first one, really blowing the market this first 2-3 years, because they may be the only ones around in the ballgame. Then you've got LSU's defensive back, Derek Stingley Jr., that according to Sports Illustrated, signed a deal with a restaurant franchise. And we all can't forget about the Fresno State basketball players, Haley and Hannah Cavender. They've been all over sports news, whatever channel you turn it to, whatever website you turn to over the last 2 weeks. They are the twin sisters. And a lot of you just went, aha, you didn't remember their names. You didn't remember Fresno State, but you remembered they were twin sisters. They have 3.4 million TikTok followers. Now, I don't have TikTok, so I can't really speak on this. But I know there's other social platforms that There's one guy I can think of right off the bat. I listen to his podcast. And because I listen to his podcast, he's on every other day. I follow him on Twitter. If you get on National Sports Overtime, I follow him. Do I go out of my way to read his tweets? No, I don't think so. If they're in my feed, and I'm going to be real honest with you, I don't scroll completely through my feed. I feel like I don't have that kind of time. And I feel like some of the people that follow me or that I follow or that say things back to people that I follow aren't really making a difference in my life, my job, this podcast, anything really. And so a lot of times I scroll quickly. I have other accounts I've got to get to. And so I'm not going to spend 2 hours scrolling through an account, or a half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the afternoon, half an hour in the evening through one account. And like I said, some of it's advertisements, some of it's this, some of it's that. And I know you're thinking, well, why do you follow him? Well, number one, the reason why I don't pay attention to a lot of his tweets is I've already heard him on the podcast. He makes his tweets, a lot of the ones that go viral or a lot of the ones that get people upset, he said earlier in the day on the podcast, so I've already heard them. But two, like I said, whether I like the tweet or not, the people that respond, most I don't want to hear. So, number one, I don't go look at every one of his tweets that he's made today, because a lot of times I've heard him. I already know about it. Two, I don't want to see, I'm not going to call them Twitter trolls, because they're not. See, I'm a person that doesn't believe Twitter trolls are people that are disagreeing with you. You're making a comment, they disagree, they make an argument. I don't think that's a Twitter troll. I have a great basketball player for his age, for his capabilities, from where he came from, that lives in the same area that I do, and he's already committed to play to his college, and he hasn't even started his senior year. There are times that he posts something, maybe talking about his teammates or talking about how great the community is or whatever. And I click on the responses. And while 70, 80% of them, maybe 90% of them, are telling him that was a great game, I loved when you did whatever. I love how you spend time with the little kids after a game, giving them high fives, talking to them, and asking about their grades. They're positive comments. But then people call the ones that disagree Twitter trolls. A Twitter troll to me is someone that's trying to stir something up and get a back and forth going, either with the person who made the tweet or to get a name calling back and forth with someone else that's already on the tweet. A Twitter troll to me is not somebody asked this particular basketball player, how many points did you have? And he responds with, I had 15. I had to work for him. I'm very lucky that I have teammates that don't care to shoot the ball and can put it in the basket. I love passing to them. So you get this guy come along and says, I wish they would have set more ball screens for you, allowing you to get open and either shoot a mid-range jumper or to drive the lane. Now, that's not even real critical. That's just stating, hey, I wish you guys could have done that. It's almost on the basketball player's side, but there will be someone that will take offense to that. He can't do that. Only the coach can make that decision. Da, 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 da. Maybe they did try that. You don't know. And therein starts a Twitter fight. It's literally some person disagreeing with something. I don't consider that a Twitter troll. Now, the person may be taking up for him, starting stuff, maybe. What I consider a Twitter troll to be is the person that says, when he says, somebody asks, how many points did you have tonight? And he says, I had 15. I'm so glad that my teammates could step up and I could pass them the ball and they could knock it down. And so a Twitter troll will come back at the basketball player and say, why are you not saying such and such who played for the other team played absolutely great defense against you and that you scored 15 points below your average because you're not as big of a deal as what you think you are? Okay, that's not a constructive criticism. That's an attacking criticism. So, I wonder how many of Haley and Hannah Cavender's 3.4 million followers on TikTok follow them because they want to see their stuff. They want to know what they've posted. They want to know what they're doing, whether they're doing the latest dance, or they're talking to them, or they're dunking, or whatever. Or are a lot of them people that think they're going to blow up in the WNBA and they want to watch their journey? Are they people from their hometown? Or are they Twitter trolls, TikTok trolls, I guess, that are just waiting for them to make a mistake so they can pile on them? And then you have TikTok followers that absolutely pay no attention to you. They accepted your follow because they accept everybody's follow. And so having 3.4 million followers, being twins, both starting for Fresno State, they announced that they got deals with Boost Mobile and Six Star Nutrition. Now, as far as I know, they haven't announced how much, but I'm sure it was a lot for a college kid. Any money is a lot for a college kid. But Boost Mobile was just acquired by Dish Network for, I think, $1.4 billion or something like that. So Boost Mobile's got a little bit of money to pay them. And I think that's also one of the things that I'm afraid of. What I may want to offer the outstanding college athlete in my area may not be what they can get from someone else who sees more potential, sees more advantages to get in early, and all of that. Because I've noticed that, you know, you've got the MMA company wanting to give $500 a month to 90 players. But then, you know, someone playing for UCLA may get $1,000 a month. So does that mean the star college athletes could be making millions in 2 or 3 years? Will that have them stay in college? If a booster of Alabama or Auburn or Michigan or UCLA that I've already named is paying you an endorsement contract and you're kind of sitting pretty and you're talking about going to the NFL or the NBA and they come up to you and say, you know, we can renegotiate that endorsement deal. Instead of paying you $500,000, I can pay you $1 million next year if you stay. Or I can pay you more. Will this become a bidding war between boosters? I know this has been going on, I think I heard on TV, for over 30 years. You think that in those 30 years, they would have come up with some kind of solution. They would have had some kind of setup ready to go to hire people to help these athletes to negotiate, help these athletes with taxes or any other forms that they've got to fill out that have a deadline. But the NCAA kind of buried their head and hoped this didn't happen. See, the NCAA made $519 million. Pay attention to that. $519 million. That's with an M. In revenue last year. And they were saying this was really going to hit them hard if they had to set up a system or if they had to pay people to help athletes. And people were going, oh, boo-hoo. You made $519 million. And they really didn't want to do the comeback that they knew they should. Because they also knew it would make them look bad. So they tried not to use it, and I'm sure someone was banging their head against the wall saying, just say it, just say it. Well, eventually they did. Somebody said, oh, boo-hoo, you've got $519 million. And someone from the NCAA finally said, yeah, do you realize that us making $519 million in 2020 was absolutely awful because in 2019 we made $1.18 billion with a B. Yes, that's almost, well, it's over 50% drop. I was going to say it's almost over a 55% drop, but I'm not 100% sure of my math, but I do know it's over a 50% drop. And yes, people can argue the reason why it was cut in half was due to a lot of the 2020 pandemic-related cancellations, them canceling whole seasons, having to cancel games, and everything. I know that. But what the NCAA, they're not whining, they're not crying, they're just stating a fact. We took a 50% cut. We really can't add on staff to help these athletes because we're never going to get back to $1.18 billion because we're losing the merchandise. Because all of those jerseys and shirts and things you wear that have the little NCAA sticker on it or a tag hanging off of it. Excuse me. Say you buy I think he was number 9 at Purdue, I'm hoping. Someone will correct me, I'm sure, if I'm wrong. It's nationalsportsovertime@gmail.com. But Purdue still puts out Drew Brees' number. Like I said, I believe it's number 9. So when you go in to the Purdue fan shop or you're looking through their website, they don't say this is Drew Brees' Purdue jersey. They don't have his name on the back. You're literally just purchasing a Purdue jersey that happens to be number 9. Now, a lot of fans go to a secondary shop or they just have them mail it to the next place and they have the name backing sewn on or embroidered on or however they want it done. And they have Brees on the back of the jersey and then the jersey comes to them and then they wear it to the Purdue games. But see, now the NCAA can put, or I should say, the athletes can put their own names on it and claim it and sell it as theirs. And that is another way they can make money. So, where is all this going to lead and what's the point of this episode, Sam? Well, I wanted to give you guys some facts. And like I said, everybody's been talking about it since July 1st. Everybody's been doing podcast episodes. Everybody's been doing articles or columns, I should say, opinion columns, about how they think this is the best thing in the world, or it's the downfall of the NCAA, or it's the downfall of the college athlete. They don't really have to go to school anymore if they're making money already and all of this. But I just kind of wanted to give you guys some facts to get you to think. Now, I'm probably going to follow this up with another episode and another episode and another episode. No, not tonight. But in the future. In the future, when some athlete scores a $5 million contract and they're only a freshman in college playing football or basketball, I'm probably going to do an episode about it. The first time a college athlete gets caught up in a scam, where they agreed to do this many appearances and they did them and then they never got paid. Or when the college athlete runs a scam on everyone else. Because we're going to see good and bad sides to this. And like I said, it's going to take us 2 years, 4 years, 10 years to figure out, on July 1st, did we open a door that we never wanted open? Or did we open a door that has led to nothing but success and has created better student athletes, or has at least made them get out of the college system and get into something like the league they're creating for players that are over 18 yet can't be drafted to the NBA, and they're going to pay them $100,000 a season to play against each other, to play in a league, and people get to see them, but yet they won't have to go to college. I don't know. This is one of those thinking podcast episodes. So write me and tell me what you think. Like I said earlier, nationalsportsovertime@gmail.com. I am not NAT Sports OT on Twitter. That's Nat Sports OT on Twitter. Yes, the messages are open. I am National Sports Overtime on Facebook. It's a page, but there should be a button on there that you can message me and tell me what you're thinking. Because I'm interested in whether you think this is a great idea or not. I'll be checking in with you guys soon, and hopefully somewhere I will see you down the road.